promoting scientific research and discovery in respect, as we should, we must also be alert to the equal and opposite danger that public policy could itself become the captain of a scientific, technological elite.
We've signed a climate convention on the importance of economic instruments and free markets. We're included in this mammoth Agenda 21 document and the Rio Declaration. Now, let me be clear on one fundamental point. The United States fully intends to be the world's preeminent leader in protecting the global environment.
Coming up, Technocracy News. And greetings from Technocracy News and Trends. Patrick Wood here, editor-in-chief and founder of Technocracy News and Trends. Still the only resource on the internet that offers a critical analysis of technocracy. More writers around the world are picking up on the topic and starting to understand it better, and they're carrying the research forward. Today, I'm going to read you a headline, and I want you to remember one word especially. The headline is, "The new blood test that predicts your death." Okay, I want you to remember the word predict in particular. But yes, there is supposedly a new blood test that can predict your proclivity to die within the next 5 or 10 years. The article starts out, "Scientists from the Max Planck Institute for Biology of Aging have developed a new blood test that can predict whether you'll die within the next 10 years. While it's not exactly the most cheerful thought for a Wednesday morning, one day all of us will die. But if you could find out exactly when you'll die, would you want to know? Scientists from the Max Planck Institute for Biology of Aging have developed a new blood test, yes indeed. The test relies on biomarkers in the blood linked to various factors that appear to affect your risk of death. Appear to affect. To develop the test, the researchers analyzed 44,168 participants aged 18 to 109, 5,512 of who died during follow-up. An analysis of the participants' blood revealed 14 biomarkers that were associated with the increased risk of death. These biomarkers were linked to various factors, including immunity, circulating fat, inflammation, and glucose control. This suggests that in the future, a sample of your blood could be analyzed for the presence of these biomarkers to indicate when you'll die. In the study, published in Nature Communications, the researchers, led by Joris Deline, explained, quote, "We subsequently show that the prediction accuracy of 5- and 10-year mortality based on a model containing the identified biomarkers and sex is better than that of a model containing conventional risk factors for mortality." The researchers highlight that further research is needed before a clinical test is available. Well, scientists have done it again. They're attempting to predict the future. And I wanted you to remember that word predict, because way back in the early 1800s, the father of scientism, Henri de Saint-Simon, made this statement. He said, "A scientist, my dear friends, is a man who foresees. It is because science provides the means to predict that it is useful. And the scientists are superior to all other men." Now here we have the crux of scientism. And yes, these scientists that are working on this new blood test, they're steeped in scientism. Predicting is everything in their mind. But a method of prediction, which was originally coined by good old Henry, is this really what makes scientists useful? That they can predict the future? I don't think so. And are scientists really superior to all other men? I don't think so. But nevertheless, whoever's behind this new blood test will undoubtedly launch it one day, and just wait until the insurance companies get a hold of this. Can you imagine? You apply for a life insurance policy or a health insurance policy for that matter, and the company demands that you take a blood test to see what your odds are of dying in the next 10 years. And they based your acceptance or denial on that test. And you remember down in the article, we already saw that it's really nothing more than just a computer model. They've taken a bunch of mumbo-jumbo elements of body chemistry and put them together, created a model, and now they're saying their model is better than the traditional models that talked about the normal risk factors for mortality. I'm not sure what that would be, but nevertheless, their model is better. And I'm sure that there's a lot of people in society who would like to get a hold of that information on you if they could. So be careful where you give your blood from now on. If anybody's running tests like this, you may want to give blood elsewhere. The next story is almost humorous, but not really. Autonomous delivery robots coming to U.S. college campuses. Well, they're cute little things called Starship. They have 6 wheels on them. They can't climb stairs yet, but they can climb up a curb, and they'll carry a few pounds worth of food. And they have a cute little orange flag that lets pedestrians know, here I come. And so college campuses are going to be the new recipients of these delivery robots that will operate autonomously. I don't know that they're exactly equipped with the most sophisticated artificial intelligence programs like autonomous cars, but college students are going to be treated to delivered pizza and other things, the common things that college students eat. It won't probably be health food, but lots of pizza, lots of Subway sandwiches and grinders and things like that. The article states, the quintessential college experience of getting pizza delivered to your dorm room is about to get a high-tech upgrade. On Tuesday, Starship Technologies announced its plan to deploy thousands of its autonomous 6-wheeled delivery robots on college campuses around the country over the next 2 years, after raising, catch this, $40 million in Series A funding. It's a big step for the San Francisco-based startup and its robots, which have been tested in over 100 cities and 20 different countries, traveled 350,000 miles, crossed 4 million streets, and just marked a milestone of completing its 100,000th delivery. College campuses, with their abundance of walking paths, well-defined boundaries, and smartphone-using, delivery-minded student bodies, are an obvious place for Starship to stake out the next phase of its business. The company is working closely with the administrations of each college where it intends to launch. It started at George Mason University and Northern Arizona University, and it will be followed in September by the University of Pittsburgh and the Purdue University in Indiana. Starship plans to deploy 25 to 50 robots at each campus over the next 24 months, which means there could be upwards of 5,000 robots puttering around these schools by 2021. Each robot is electric, has a trunk that can fit about 20 pounds of cargo, namely food, and has a suite of cameras around the outside that can be used to identify obstacles and help guide the robot to its destination. I might also add those cameras can probably take dandy pictures of all the students walking around up and down those same paths. They have a delivery radius of 3 to 4 miles and can travel a maximum speed of 4 miles per hour, which is obviously slower than a delivery by a human on a bike or in a car. Starship CEO Lex Bayer says the robot's ability to work for many hours without a break is what gives it an advantage. Bayer further said, quote, there's also no guilt or shame. You can order whatever you want, whenever you want, and you don't have to worry about another student who you're sending around to do this pickup for you. It's just a robot who's going to deliver it to you. Well, I never knew there was guilt or shame about ordering a pizza and having a person bring it to your door. Apparently, Mr. Bayer thinks that students are ashamed currently, and he's going to solve their problem for them. They won't be ashamed when they order from Starship because, after all, it's not a person, has no emotions, so how can you feel guilt or shame over it? Well, another thing is, you don't need to give them a tip either. I guess that's good. It continues, the robots can climb curbs but not stairs, which may limit their appeal to customers who live in multi-story buildings. I think so. That would be really interesting. Maybe they have other students carry the robot up the stairs so that it can continue its journey on a level floor. I guess getting down won't be quite as difficult. All it has to do is just go down the stairs, maybe head first, maybe head over heels. Bayer says this is why Starship is targeting markets that are less dense with lower heights. But he also speculates that if the robot delivery takes off, business owners may eventually decide to include a separate door just for the robots, much like a cat owner would include a door flap for their pet. Definitely possible in the future, he opines. Well, it's all cute and humorous. Starship may be a success, it may not be a success, but I'll tell you what, there will come a time when the students turn on their lovely delivery robots, because that's the way fads work. When the novelty wears off and the aggravation sets in and people get hit or bumped into by these things, or the more cantankerous students that are given to vandalism might well make mincemeat out of these things when nobody's looking. And then, in the end of it, when they're rejected, many of these units will end up in the junkyard. The last article has to do with ride-sharing again, and this seems to be coming back into the news in a derogatory sense, I might add. Ride-sharing services, as you remember, originally were all geared to get you out of your car. They wanted you to give up your car. This has been a plank of Agenda 21 ever since 1992, to reduce car ownership and get people out of their cars, to give up their cars, and to use other types of transportation. That could be city buses, it could be taxi cabs, it could be a ride share, it could be an electric scooter or an electric bicycle. But ride sharing from the very beginning was promised to decrease traffic, it was promised to decrease pollution, and it was promised to get you out of your car. Well, guess what? It didn't work. And now we have major ride-sharing companies all around the world, like Uber and Lyft, who are doing their best to build their businesses. There's nothing wrong with building a business. But the intention of those businesses to accomplish the utopia of sustainable development has totally failed. And so another article has appeared that says ride-sharing actually increases the traffic crush at airports. Airports have always been problematic. They're certainly not a downtown city street, but airports are perpetually crowded anyway, especially when flights are coming in and going out. And so this study says that, have you been to an airport lately? Then you've surely been in a backup on the roadways or had to jockey for a place in front of the terminal to pick up or drop off a traveler. And it's not your imagination. Traffic at the airports, even before you get inside, has gotten worse. The cause is not just the record number of travelers, but it's also the shift to ride-sharing. One frequent business traveler, Tanvi Gandham, says, quote, airports were planned for taxi lines, not this other large vehicle transportation mode. She's a management consultant. To address the crowding, airports are starting to make changes, adding express lanes for travelers without checked bags, separate areas for rideshare companies, and larger offsite lots for waiting. At the same time, rideshare companies like Lyft and Uber are adding new capabilities to their apps, matching, for example, drivers who have just dropped off passengers with people waiting to be picked up, cutting down the time vehicles are circulating and waiting. The explosion in rideshare demand has caught airports off guard, and operations staff are scrambling to address it, says Kama Simmons, spokesman for the Portland International Airport in Oregon. Rideshare pickups there, she said, have climbed to 106,000 from 48,000 in the last 2 years. The congestion problem starts with this. More people are flying than ever. According to the International Air Transport Association, the airline industry's trade group, the total number of airline passengers in North America will top 1 billion this year, an increase of about 19% from 2014. To accommodate the additional travelers, airports have been building new gates and terminals, and that construction is causing even more traffic problems. In 2014, the San Francisco International Airport became one of the first airports to license ride-sharing companies, and within a few years, the traffic volumes were untenable, says the airport spokesman. He continued, "Our goal is for the average speed through the area to be 15 miles per hour," he said. "We regularly had stop-and-go traffic and gridlock." The airport, which served almost 58 million travelers in 2018, compared with 47 million 5 years ago, is in a developed area without room to expand. With the freeway on one side and the bay on the other, the airport simply cannot increase its footprint. So you see the problem, at least in one airport in San Francisco International. So the promise of utopia with ride-sharing vehicles has turned out to be, again, just the opposite. We see this every time we see sustainable development in practice. For all the people that want to save the world, it seems they just don't know what they're doing. And they end up actually destroying it rather than saving it. This has been true up and down the line of policies all over the world. Ride-sharing is simply just one thing. It may be really a minor thing, too, by comparison. But all of the ecology-minded movements, all of the Green New Deal rhetoric, all of these things are designed to save the world, they say. And yet, every time you turn around, you see some other evidence that is doing just the opposite. It's destroying things, not fixing things. This is one of the greatest flaws of sustainable development in the world today, is that it's antithetic to common sense and to free enterprise and capitalism. It destroys everything it touches. And this is not going to change. The only way to stop this type of destruction is simply stop the idiocy that brought it to us in the first place. That's easier said than done, I realize. We try our best to get the information out to people who can think about it and chew on it and say, you know, I think he's right. I think we need to put up a stop sign on these projects and these crazy things that people are doing to save the world. Maybe these people should just go back to paying attention to their own lives and living their own lives, raising their own families, and doing their own thing. Maybe they need a job where they go to work from 8 to 5. Maybe they need some type of a job that has some hard labor associated to it. Maybe they could go be a plumber or a roofer or some other job that requires a little bit of sweat and elbow grease. Maybe that would fix some of them and bring them back down to earth. Well, I'm Patrick Wood for Technocracy News and Trends. We'll see you next time.